later. Yeah, yeah.
He did what?
I want to be that. My nails are chipped. My ends are split. I flex my fancy bag, but we all know it's counterfeit. These jeans are thrift. My radish. I like my wine cheap, as we all know.
Welcome to Art Root Radio, and I'm your host, artist Michelle Lockery. It is January, and it is 2024, and we're going to do something a little bit different here at the Wayfinding Network, which is what our network is called in this passion project that we're doing on, well, the radio. Is it really a radio? No. But what is it? Well, it's a platform for people to come together and connect through the practice of art. I always called it the Wayfinder Project or Wayfinder Art, but it doesn't really matter what kind of art you do. It's the, well, it's the practice of living an artistic life, whether that is in the trades, as writing, as cooking. Life is art. And for time immemorial, we've been finding our way through navigation and community building and tool making. Take it right back to all of our indigenous roots on this planet. And it's pretty fascinating how humanity is and where humanity is right now. So to kick off 2024, it's been an interesting year for me, this last 2023. I'm laughing and my chair is squeaking and I'm sorry about that, but that's how my 2023 was. A squeaky chair. That's a really good way to, can you hear? That's a really good way to say it. It was a squeaky chair. And lots of life lessons and lots of challenges, but it led me to here. And to here is, it's time for me to write a book. Can you hear the screaming screech of fear coming across the microphone? Oh, well, I had to dim it down because, or my wonderful editor, Stacy, has to dim that down. But I hope you can hear it because that's terrifying to me. Probably more terrifying than painting a 300-foot wall. But, we all have our passions, we all have our fears, and this feels really raw, but I have something to say, as we all do. And my passion and love for a muralist has deep roots. I come from a very, very creative immigrant family from all different parts of the world. And it's through those connections that I have been honored with the dream life of being a muralist. I always wanted to be a politician, and I think in some ways artists really are true politicians. I mean, we record time, we hear time, we present time, and paintings are this timeless time capsule. I mean, you can go back to cave drawings, and well, that's kind of the first social media. And so I'm very, very honored and very gracefully grateful for the career I've had in social change and with the thousands of young and old people that have graced me with their stories. Now here's the problem. What do I do with all of those stories? What do I do with all that learning? I could do social media posts and I can have a blog, but together it has to be a painting. A book is a painting with the side of the pages painted in the beautiful passion of all those people who came together to tell their stories. You can see the murals. The murals are these monuments now. They're testimonies to time, and many of them are definitely hitting heritage status. And some of the images, well, are not as relevant today, or in some cases more relevant today if you talk about war and how we're living. So that's, you know, time and history will repeat itself if we don't learn. And murals have been how we've been teaching children and leaving hopefully a legacy behind of change. So bear with me. I'm going to do this very slowly as I write. It's very healing, but I would like to invite you along on my journey. And the journey starts, well, with a little girl with braids and knobby knees and coal dust in her knees, and in a little town, a coal mining town. So I truly am the coal miner's daughter. And I watched my parents, well, live, struggle, love, laugh, and teach their children to use their hands and to use their hands to build community. My book has an interesting title. It could be called Art Root Canada. Well, that's just the process that I was lucky enough to share for 30 years and help communities raise millions of dollars in a model and process of procurement of people, arts, trades, community, government, into a beautiful tourism legacy. But that's not it. What it is? Well, what am I? I am the muralist. And what am I? An art wayfinder. The artist stood at the edge of the hot scaffolding, overlooking the sprawling canvas of the city below. The wind tucked at her paint-splattered hair, and the distant sounds of traffic and conversation floated up to the rooftop studio. It was a place that she had come to know intimately over the years, a place where dreams took shape, lives fell apart, and creativity knew no bounds. As she surveyed the streets below and the vast brick wall yet to be finished, the artist couldn't help but wonder how she had arrived at this precipice of creation. Each wall another lens, each community another story, and all of the brick walls morphing into one never-ending conversation and relationship with the elements and the space and the people below the safety of the scaffolding. This memoir is my attempt to unravel the tangled threads of my past, to make sense of the choices I've made, and to find meaning in a life filled with both triumphs and tribulations on walls around the world. The orange crayon lay on the wooden table of the community hall. The pale orange wax crayon was not the color I wanted, but it was the only crayon left by the other children. I picked it up with tears starting to fill up my eyes, and a hot feeling overtook my whole soul. How could I win the coloring contest at the church hall with that pale crayon? Too shy for asking for a different one, I reached out and took the crayon. The familiar smell of the wax and paper filled my senses. I chewed the end of the crayon nervously as I waited for the coloring sheets to be passed out. I looked over at the bright orange crayon that the face across the table had in her hand, and I felt jealousy. I hated coloring. I still do. I love to draw and create wild crayon strokes that dance out of the lines, and I wanted pumpkins to be purple and horses to be blue. If I had to color, I wanted the crayon to be that bright orange one. My aunt put the pumpkin coloring sheet in front of me and told all the kids to start and to make sure we stayed within the lines. I remember wiping tears off my soft sweater as they strolled down my cheek. The sweater that was handed down to me and was way too big, the sleeves hiding my fingers as I started the rhythm of the coloring of the lines. I felt sadness. My pumpkin was pale and shy. The chatter of dishes and women's voices filled my ears as sandwiches were being made in the kitchen of the church hall. The little triangular sandwiches that the women of my community would make for all occasions, weddings, teas, mine disasters, deaths, forest fires, funerals, all required the perfectly made triangular offerings. Butter thick and cold on the salmon salad ones, egg ones that sometimes had bits of shells that would surprise you with their sudden crunch, and then the cookies would be brought out. Wonderful creations with bright red candied cherries and powdered sugar that would make you cough if you ate them too much. The women were all of all nationalities. As our little town was a mining town, and the women had come from all over the world as part of the Canadian immigration schemes during those decades. My family was a mixed bag of nuts, my dad would say. My father's family was from Scotland, Wales, and Czechoslovakia. My mother's family from Ukraine. In small mining towns, though, everyone was family. Aunties and uncles were not always blood, but forced family of immigrant people that shared food, support, and a strong work and community ethic. As the sandwiches and cakes were eaten, the women's laughter and sharing of stories made music with the sounds of the dishes and voices echoing in the church hall. I watched that bright orange pumpkin crayon across the table. I watched the little girl with her strokes. The strokes perfectly colored. I saw my random pale strokes and tried to cover my pumpkin with my arm as I colored. I felt shame. Then suddenly across the table, the bright orange crayon broke. The face across the table in glee as she lifted up her finished bright orange pumpkin art for all the tea ladies to see. I quickly reached for that broken crayon. I unwrapped the torn paper covering, and using the broken edge of the crayon, I traced my pale pumpkin lines, tracing so hard the wax was coming off the paper. I traced each bump and line in the coloring sheet over and over again. I can still feel the paper and the smells and the sounds in the room. Holding the small piece of crayon in my nail-bitten hand, I felt something new, a feeling of orange crayon power. Then, like in a Charlie Brown cartoon, an adult hand reached in and picked up my coloring sheet, and I was chosen as the winner for creating an interesting pumpkin, for being creative and doing something different, and for coloring out of the lines. My heart and my head felt so hot. Did my aunt choose my pumpkin picture because she saw the tears? Or did my pumpkin really stand out? Well, I only really know this, that day I learned that I wasn't a pale orange crayon. I learned that I had a voice, and I knew my voice was connected to that bright orange crayon, and for being seen the first time for coloring out of the lines. So that's how my book starts. And I can't wait to share this canvas with listeners for my own healing and maybe for inspiration for people, artists, women, children out there who, well, felt like they were a pale orange crayon. And I always say, that one orange crayon changed my life. So with our children and our grandchildren, it is the simplest, kindest words or the hardest words that can form your child's future. I am ever so grateful to the women in my life that taught me, well, not just women, and men of that immigrant coal mining town, of how to build community. And for me, in that black, dusty town with my coal dust embedded knees, a little girl with pigtails found an orange crayon. Thanks for listening to, well, my chapter, or the beginning of writing down what my life has been about. And sometimes when you have a career in the arts and you go back and you have to tell the story, it is that original, well, for me, the orange crayon. And so the fact that I can remember the orange crayon leads me to so many other stories. What I'm planning for the next little while in 2024 is a series of children's books. It's something I began my career in. I really wanted to create children's books when I had little kids. And I have them. They're still on a shelf. And they were one about bugs and one about climbing a ladder and playing in the clouds on rainy days when my kids were looking for something to do. Never did I realize how much I would love my grandchildren. Well, of course, I knew I would love them, but how they would remind me of the magic that gets forgotten. That orange crayon, when I was a little girl, is, well, it's kind of like my arrow. It's kind of like, I'm a Sagittarian, so for me, it was always, you know, I think I was a shy child. If I look back, I definitely was neurodivergent. Anybody who knows me knows that I have a really hard time sitting still and a really hard time not interrupting people, and it was a really hard thing in a time when people didn't understand neurodivergent children. The talent that so many people with different brains have. I watched my dad, and my dad would have, he could build anything, you know, and, but he struggled in school. He had a grade 9 education, and that shame of leaving school, but knowing how brilliant he was something he carried his whole life. Yet he ran for political office. He taught me the importance of knowing about how to raise community dollars and how to work together, and the importance of clubs and nonprofits, and how community really is, well, it's part of what you do in your lifestyle, and that art of lifestyle is in connection. So that little orange crayon and that little girl's hands, you know, who didn't understand that why she bit her nails was how she could stay calm. You now see kids with fidget toys. Well, my fidget toys was I bit my nails till they bled. And I would watch my grandparents. So I want you to imagine as a child in a coal mining town with, you know, coal dust and immigrants, but wonderful food and wonderful people and people that would come to my mom's kitchen table. And kitchen table learning is really how so many families teach. And my grandfather, he would take pencils. And you know those Arbright tables that were you know, if you were anywhere close to my age, you will remember. If not, you see them in secondhand stores and people think they're all retro and vintage. Well, they were great canvases. They were this great empty canvas. And my grandfather would give us pencils and he would draw with us, and he would draw rabbits and nature and trees. And he would tell us the stories of fish and why it's important to keep the waters clean. But I can remember him signing his name, Charles Joseph. And he would tell me your signature was everything because it named your property. And he had this handwriting, and I would like, he'd say, oh, put your arm up. You can't rest your arm, and handwriting is important. Well, that was a hard issue for me because I was backhanded and teachers wanted me to write the other way, and that would cause me stress. But yet at that kitchen table, there was never anything stressful. My grandparents would talk about the war times. They would talk about sugar shortages. They would talk about when they didn't have a lot to eat. My grandmother would write out scone recipes and pie recipes, and you'd get your one square of chocolate and you'd have your one cup of tea in the perfect teacup, you know, with one lump of sugar. And hearing that my grandmother would use ration coupons to get sugar and put them under the steps. And we knew that under the kitchen steps was where all the sugar was hidden, so that, you know, if they couldn't get sugar, my grandmother had sugar and packages of Jell-O and things that she could add to her lemon loaves to make them moist when she didn't have butter. I thought that was so brilliant that she used gelatin, which also, you know, gelatin is made out of hooves, so there was a nutritional value to that. And I would hear those and I would remember them. So that orange crayon has stayed with me like my entire life. And so now that I'm a grandmother, it is only through those children that magic comes back. And I bring, you know, we have a huge garden and I have horses, and those kids come to visit and I can remember magic. What is it? That blank place before you pick up that orange crayon, and you're brave and you take that stroke and your imagination of, yes, you can climb a ladder in the garden to the clouds. And yes, horses can have colorful tails and horses can be blue and their tails can paint walls. And all of that imagination, which has built a world that my grandparents could never fathom could happen. Like, I think about listening to their times, and I think about my career of painting war stories and war vet stories and a world that is so different now. But yet those people thought that they were avant-garde and they were out there and they were making changes. And, you know, the Industrial Revolution and having a car and having a phone and, you know, having a colored TV, having your own bathroom with a flush toilet was a novel idea to my parents. So then now if you look at, you know, where we've gone with digital and have we though? I look at all of the skills and all of the tools we have. And really the same story is recipes and storybooks and fairy tales. London Bridge is falling down. Well, that just told a story of the past. And I see these kids, and last night it was about 10 o'clock and my one grandson is texting me on his little cell phone, and I can't always be there even though we live close, but he's telling me a story in text as we're both curled up in bed, and I can tell him a story through digital means, and it was like this connection, and we keep these connections. So the tool of the internet has been able to be a party line to us all. I can phone my mom, and as much as we all live apart, which is so hard, and the breakdown of families because we cannot support each other, because, you know, my mom should be here teaching the kids and I should be helping my daughter and son, and those kids could be learning in this big system, yet we're not because we're so far apart and we have to use these tools. Well, in the middle of it, I was reminded of the storybooks and the orange crayon and how it is so important for the young people to remind us to connect to our imaginations. So the podcast for this year, what we've determined, our team, is that we want to connect again and help the listeners connect back. So murals, they're great, and songs and music and musicians and artists. There's this act of breathing the art. you have to create, or like breathing, you just start fading away and your imagination gets dull and your body gets sick and that orange crayon is sitting on the shelf, but for some reason you're too sad to pick it up. And then at one point, that big empty canvas gets so intimidating that you forget who you are. You know, there's been COVID and sickness and the prices of food, everything is like, I just think as humanity, we've just been through so much. Are we afraid to pick up the orange crayon? Or what is your orange crayon? Is your crayon a guitar? Is your crayon a paintbrush? Is your crayon digital art? Is your crayon baking? Like my mother bakes. When she's having a bad day, she makes cream puffs. She makes pierogies. Today is Ukrainian Christmas, and so she will cook. And she fed a family and was loved, and her love language is feeding people. We're not there, because let me tell you, I would love for my mother to feed me. There is nothing like my mother's pierogies. So let's throw that sunflower learning in the middle of this, because I would love that. But no, I had my muffin and my coffee, and I'll talk to her. And her and I will talk about the kitchen table, and we will connect. And I'm going to say to her, Pat, I need your story with me. What's your orange crayon today? What did you talk to the kids for? Did you phone them? What are they talking and what are they learning? And then all of a sudden, there's that life's learning again. And that's what I'm hoping the storybooks that I am planning to create this year will do. I mean, can you imagine a storybook that's basically a journal that every day asks you, pretend that you're magic. Pretend you can create anything you want. Do you know what? For an hour, you get to just color outside the lines. And yes, you have to go to work. And yes, you got to pay the bills. And yes, there's worries. And you got your mortgage and all of those things. But maybe it's go downtown and find a senior and bring two crayons and say, hey, want a color? That's what kids in kindergarten do. That's the opening. Hi, how are you? Do you want a color? And that's funny. I've done many talks in many industries around the world, and I have sat at very large corporate tables of all walks of life. And it's funny. I can remember being at a community, I think I was in LA, and there was all these people in suits, and they were all very important with their perfectly polished shoes and their briefcases, and they all sat down. And I remember being told by my lawyer at the time, make sure you wear pantyhose and make sure you got this suit on and make sure. Well, we all sat around the table and there was no creativity at the table. There was no imagination. There was no magic. It was boxes, these white boxes of blank canvas. And I want you to think about the canvases in a box without the first color stroke on it, all trying to be creative solutions, but scared to put their crayon on their canvas. And then all of a sudden, I just took this box of crayons that I had, because I always travel with a box of wax crayons, and I dumped them on the table. And then I unrolled this big roll of brown paper, and everybody looked at me, and then I was like, what color crayon do you want? And everybody looked shocked, and then everybody kind of laughed. And then we started to just color and draw and imagine. And instead of something being two-dimensional, it became three-dimensional. Building communities around the world has been a three-dimensional process. It's you have to enter your community and look from all walks of life. Like, you know, you look from the kids on the street to that are challenged because they, you know, they're trying to find their way and they've been told to get jobs and they're just learning how to fly. And seniors who have done their time but have the stories to tell. And then you have our systems, which are so important, and our education systems and all that. But how do we bring that all together? How do we all color together? And that's, for me, what has been the most important thing about the walls that I've created around the world, is that everybody got a chance to color in some form, whether you just sat there and watched, or whether you brought scaffolding, or whether you just sat on the street like you did in kindergarten with your plastic bucket you know, the little lunch bucket. Mine was a Barbie. I really liked Barbies. I just thought Barbies were magic because I could live through all the lives of my Barbie dolls, although I used to cut their hair off and color them funny colors and, you know, sometimes cut their heads off and wrap them in duct tape or my dad's black tape and make these costumes because I always thought I could make everything better. I always thought I could just add one layer of Michelle and it would be better. I'm sure my mother, which is how we ended up with me cutting my wet mother's wedding dress and our dress project, but I just was allowed to be creative, respectful, connected to my community. My parents demanded it. And when I look back, I really was a very lucky child. In some form, I was homeschooled, even though I was in school, and I was raised by a community. And that community, well, that coloring box was well formed. You know, people might look back at a coal mining town as a non-desirable place to live. Well, for me, when I look back and I took my grandkids home this year and we all went back to our family cabin and back to our family homes and my grandchildren felt at home and I watched them just run and play and love the idea that there was this coal mining town that was an economy for all of British Columbia. But when they really sat around the table, we just all drew and talked stories. And, you know, there was masters around that table. There were doctors and craftsmen and bricklayers and people who built roads and people who built houses, people who did businesses, people who fixed cars, people who built cars, people who built mines, people that worked in coal, people who worked in art, people who were in government, all in that little town. So now I want you to imagine all those crayons. And those crayons in the storybooks will be all there. And for me, it was like I was lucky enough to go through all of those processes in the nonprofit world of community through bake sales and church sales and my grandmother and my grandfathers and my aunts and my uncles teaching me business, community, art, education, all at the kitchen table. So here I am sitting here with a Wacom. A little intimidated, I gotta tell you, trying to learn how to paint on the Wacom and not just to paint and to challenge myself again and to feel that intimidation that, yes, I'm a senior now and there's many seniors trying to struggle with this digital world. Too intimidated, like the at-risk youth used to be, to say, how do I do that? How do I do that banking? You know, how do I do that? And walking into situations where the young people are annoyed because we don't have the same digital skills. We just don't. But we do have knowledge and we do have management skills and we have lots to say. But that disconnect, how do we bring that together? My murals used to. Well, now I'm seeing perhaps this podcast is, you know, we can talk about, you know, the things that are missing. And I can talk about how do we connect. And I can talk about, well, I don't want to be on the big walls anymore. It's very hard work. And I want to have the end of my life to be very healthy. And the sun and climbing walls is not a healthy life for me because it's hot and that's hard work. And I, you know, there's so many young people doing it now and they're doing wonderful work. And I love that. And I still hope to do a few more legacy pieces, but my hands are much more now to the podcast, to storybooks and to telling stories for children and to give children a platform to teach us. My little Eileen comes in and she's, my little Rosie comes in and she's in my garden and she talks about planting. Grandma, we got to plant. We have to plant seeds. We have to plant seeds, tons and tons of sunflowers. So she planted tons, like there must've been 200 or more seeds and they all grew in my beautiful garden. And to see them growing and to see her absolute joy of learning how to work. My daughter homeschools one of her children, and one of her children goes through the regular system. Our Rosie is somewhere in the middle. So Rosie's somewhere in the middle, and it's interesting because she wants to learn how to work. And I can hear the past. I can hear the business people in my life that run the dairies, and my grandfather who was a union man, and the businesses. My uncle had a meat market. there was all these different skills. My dad had businesses, yet it was a creative trades business. And I look at all of the immigrants that came through the eyes of Rosie. Now, a sunflower takes work. You got to till the ground. And although we do permaculture, so we do a lot less of that, her flowers, she grew them. She came and harvested them. She worked. She is just little, and she would work all day. Whew, Grandma, this is hard work. But she never stopped. And she got her harvest, and then she harvested a massive box of sunflower seeds. Now she's already making the envelopes to sell them, to understand that she can now, she's made this money, and that she can plant more sunflowers, she can share the sunflowers, she can eat the sunflowers, and she can start again and make more sunflowers. Well, what kind of economy teaching is that? Brilliant, all from a sunflower. That sunflower image, which we all know is now a symbol of peace, but the sunflower is the creative energy of the world. Sunflowers are the eyes of the universe, and it is through that golden ratio of art, that's what a sunflower is. Its petals are the gold that you could make, you could dye fabric, the food, the stalks. Well, the stalks you can make fabric, you can burn them. I store mine and I use them for kindling. They work amazing. My horses eat them. Like, that is the economy. And I think if we could somehow teach that economy, oh, guess what? We can. A storybook. I'm just going to take that knowledge and of working with my grandchildren into a storybook. That's education. And that's what all of my projects were about. Bringing young people together and old people and exchanging skills. That magic, that connection, art gives us all. I may call it wayfinder art, which is what it is. It's finding your way through art. Perhaps there was so many neurodivergent people that just felt the system wasn't for them, or they felt shame and it didn't work for them. And the system works for many people. It works. Many people excel at school, but many people don't. I was lucky enough to find a way to make a living through extraordinary life lessons and careers and opportunities. And now I'm watching all these young people, and I miss that energy. All those years on those walls, it was the energy and knowledge of those young people and the old people coming together in this orchestration of magic. And I keep using the term magic because I think that's what the world has lost. In these last years, the magic has been dimmed. Our imagination has been dimmed. Our coloring box have all become these gray crayons. But yet we are this massive 64-pack Crayola coloring box. And all we got to do is open the box. So I'm going to start with the orange crayon. And I'm going to start with a series of stories for adults. And that's why I read you the opening chapter of the outline for my children's books. Because it was remembering, as the muralist, why. And that's where I was comfortable. Because I painted my first picture with an orange crayon, and then I continued on my bedroom walls, I continued on community walls, and I have been taking it to the wall for over 35 years. Well, over 60 years now, because I have been coloring on the walls since I was a child. How many of you colored on the walls, and how many of you have forgotten to connect to yourself by being brave and naughty enough to color on those giant white walls? I highly recommend it. Go find a crayon, whatever your color is. And maybe, just maybe, you might find yourself again on Art Root Radio. Thanks for taking the time to maybe pour a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, or maybe a glass of wine, and climbing my scaffolding to connect. Connect with, well, with the act of art. Art is in us all. It is what surrounds our soul with magic. And I only know this is that storytelling through my whole life has been my go-to place. And connecting to my children, my family, my friends, to people through art and the production and process of art has been an incredible experience. And I hope to share some of those experiences on my podcast. It's a passion project because there's just no other way to share the magic of the people, places, and walls that I have painted around the world. And now that I'm trying to make these storybooks of taking it to the wall, I hope that through this medium, you're getting some kind of connection and that some kind of crazy magic floats through this speaker from my office window, and you might just not be too afraid. And maybe that you will pick up your orange crayon and you will see the radio and hear the art on ArtRoot Radio. I'm broken, a lie. Truth is, I'm lost but fine. Truth is, I'm a mess, just trying to get by. But I still got fight.